We of the Axis are all hopeful monsters. Mutations who hope one day to contribute to the germ line.
Monsters, she agreed.
As are you, Nara Oxum. What do you mean? In your ability, your madness, you are one of us. If synesthesia implants had been invented a few hundred years earlier, before apathy treatments existed to cure you, all those with unexpected reactions to the process, brain bugs, photism, verbochromia, even your empathy, would have been cast aside as mad, as were my ancestors. The descendants of these unfortunates, people like you, would be in the plague axis now.
For a moment, Nara was revolted at the thought. Her condition was not genetic, but the result of untried technology. A small percentage had unexpected reactions to any new technique.
I'm not a mutation. You are. The last 100 years have shown that reactions to synesthesia implants are often inherited. Your kind are a genetic anomaly, one that was hidden until the environment changed. Synesthesia revealed you.
The plagueman fell silent, letting her digest his words. She could almost grasp his viewpoint, unfamiliar though it was. So much lay hidden in the human code, revealed only by events. It was like the rainforests of Vasthold, whose vast reservoirs of protein structures routinely delivered up new drugs and bioware, but only when the need for them became apparent. Irrational design, it was called. Plumbing diversity for random answers. Events could make a monster or a savior of anyone. But Nara had never thought of herself that way.
Possibly, she said. But you shamed us, Nara Oxum. You faced down the Emperor, as we did not.
She laughed bitterly.
Now you decide you don't want a new race of mutants, after the point is moot. We realized even before Lawrence Zai's victory that we had gone too far. Our thinking had been changed by cowardice. We were afraid to oppose the Sovereign.
She shrugged.
So you say. Allow us to prove it, Nara Oxum.
How? He shuffled toward her, held out his hand. Oxum no longer felt compelled to hide her disgust, and she stood and pulled away.
Any vote you wish, Senator, we will side with you.
Nara raised her eyebrows. The War Council was structured around a natural 4-4 split, the 3 opposition parties and Axe Milk against Loyalty and the 3 dead. The Plague Axis held the deciding vote. She realized now that the Emperor had planned it that way. When they had confirmed the War Council, the Senate had thought the Plague Axis a natural ally to the living, not knowing of the pressures that the Axis suffered from the Rix blockade, not realizing how the Emperor could bend them to his will. But the Sovereign had overplayed his hand. His attempted genocide had turned them into guilty, regretful accomplices.
You'll vote the way I say?
The biosuit nodded.
We will, once, when you ask it.
I'll let you know. But however many votes it takes, there must be no more genocides.
None,
the plagueman agreed. That was something, Senator Oxum thought. She had an ally. Perhaps this war didn't have to be a bloodbath. If the man were genuine, perhaps it was time for a gesture. Swallowing, Nara crossed to where the representative stood and put her hand on the shoulder of the suit. It was as cold as a dead man's arm.
What do you want from me in return? Surely not just absolution, she said softly.
The biosuited man turned away from her, faced the darkness of the Martyrs' Park, and cleared his throat a very recognizable sound.
If you would favor us, Nara Oxen, we do have a request. Perhaps your particular ability is merely happenstance, a slip of a few angstroms in the implant procedure. But if not, then maybe your empathy can be added to the germline.
He turned to her.
So one day, in your own time, we would like you to have a child, or give us what we need to make one.
A child, she thought. More madness in this universe, another Oxum addicted to the passions of the crowd. Addicted to drugs to maintain sanity, given to loving broken men light years distant. This was like some fairy tale, a firstborn promised to demons. She shuddered.
Give me your vote when I ask it, she said, and I'll consider it.
Another hopeful monster for the cauldron. Captain. Lawrence I watched the object in the bridge airscreen, his mind fighting against the mesmerizing undulations of its surface. Now that the Lynx was closing with the thing, simple telescopy revealed a level of detail that had been invisible to active senses. The wild dunes that played across its visage had grown far more active since Marx's probes had imaged them. The object was definitely alive now, clearly possessed of some inner animating presence. Zai could sense the compound mind in its movements. Somehow, the Ricks had found a way to mirror the data of an entire world, to compress and transmit it, and house it in this strange arrangement of matter. The planet had merely served as an incubator, virgin soil in which to culture the first of a new species of the compound mind, one able to move across the stars. The Ricks' takeover of Legius was not an invasion. It was a breeding program. And the apparatus was afraid of a few transmissions escaping Legius? Here was the data of the entire planet wrapped up and ready for shipping back into Rick's space. Every aspect of Imperial technology and culture would be open for other Rick's minds to probe and pick apart, a living model of the enemy brought back as spoils of war. Only the unlikely survival of the Lynx had given the Empire a chance to stop this obscenity from returning home. "Charge the photon cannon," he ordered. "Aye, sir," said Gunner Wilson, his fingers already moving as he spoke. Zai had left the overtly hostile act of readying his weapons until now, hoping to disguise his intentions as long as possible. Thus far, the Lynx had sent out only unarmed scout probes and minesweepers, as if gathering information were the frigate's only mission. Who knew how naive this newly born mind might be? Of course, the data they had already obtained might prove valuable once analyzed. The virtual matter of which the object was composed was far beyond any technology the Empire had ever created. What they discovered here might begin to unravel the mystery of how it worked. Even an oblique understanding of the underlying science would be a war prize for the ages. "Launch ram scatter drones." "Launch, sir." The ship didn't respond with the usual recoil as the drones left. The launch rail was still not repaired, so the drones went forth under their own power. Between their slow start and the frigate's nearly matched velocity with the object, what few ram scatters the Lynx still possessed wouldn't achieve much of a collision vector. But they hardly mattered. Zai was sure that energy weapons were the key here. Data analysis was certain that whatever else it might be able to do, the object could definitely make its outer layers very hard. It was probably impervious to kinetic energy. Still, it would be revealing to observe how it reacted to powerful explosives. "Any changes, Tyre?"
"No, sir."
The DA ensign was up here on the bridge, fighting an unpredictable foe. Zai needed an analysis without the usual filters. The captain dipped into Tyre's synesthesia channel. Damn, the woman was going to burn out her second sight, if not her brain. Amanda Tyre was overlaying visible light telescopy, a dozen drone viewpoints, and the object's wildly gyrating chromograph all at once. How could she comprehend anything amid that torrent of data? Zai blinked the images away. Well, if Tyre wanted fireworks, he would give her some. "Hit it with the first wave," he ordered the drone pilots.
"Aye, sir,"
came an unfamiliar voice. Even for these inconsequential and stupid ram drones, Zai wished that Joachim Marx were here. The man brought an intelligence to his warcraft that was irreplaceable. Besides Hobbs, Marx was the Lynx's most valuable officer. But the man was still down in sickbay, stricken with whatever overload had afflicted his brain after being caught in the path of the transmitted compound mind. The airscreen view widened, opening to include both the Lynx and the enemy, the vector marks of the ram drones between them. A few seconds later, the drones scattered, solid green arcs splitting into a hazy multitude of trajectories as they approached the object. "In 3, 2... As the missiles struck, a gasp of surprise swept across the bridge. For a moment, a part of the object's surface froze, as suddenly motionless as video stopping on a single frame. The hundreds of drone-lit impacts flared red, rose petals scattered across frozen ocean waves, then disappeared without leaving a mark. With the threat to the object past, the dunes jumped into motion again.
"What was that?"
Zai asked.
"I'm not sure, sir," Tyre said slowly. "The object became something. Definitely a crystal, but I have no idea of what the matrix was composed of."
"Nothing showing on the chromograph?" Hobbs asked.
"There is, ma'am, but it's not a recognizable element."
"Transuranium," Zai muttered. They knew that the object might be able to create unknown elements well past the upper reaches of the normal periodic table. They would be metals of a sort, but with unlimited half-lives and therefore non-radioactive. Data analysis had worked feverishly to determine what characteristics such exotic substances might possess with hundreds or even thousands of electrons in stable orbits. But such basic research was impossible when the elements themselves had never existed, couldn't exist except within the object itself. "No, sir," Tyre said a moment later, "I don't think that's it." She said nothing more. "Tyre, report." Her head started nodding quickly, her hands flickering with gestural commands like an autistic child. "I see it now, sir," she said breathlessly. "The atoms of the object's armor have fewer than 100 electrons, but they aren't configured in the usual way." "What's the usual way?" Hobbs asked. "In spherical energy levels," Tyre said. "Look." The periodic table appeared. Godspite, Zai thought. In the heat of battle with the Rick's mind, and they were going to get a chemistry lesson. This was why DA was always kept off the bridge. He raised his hand to wave the apparition away. But then the rectangular table turned into a spiral. Zai's hand froze. "Electrons orbit their nuclei in set energy shells," Tyre explained. "Orbital quanta, in effect. But the object's virtual matter seems to be breaking that law. According to our probes, the object's surface was briefly composed of an element with new quantum states, new subshells. Transuranium means it's off the high end of the table, but this element was on top of the table, on the z-axis, like when imaginary numbers add another dimension to a number line. The elemental spiral extruded itself into a conch shell, rising up like some periodic tower of Babel. At each story of the structure, the familiar elemental groups gained new members. I think the object's surface armor was composed largely of carbon, Tyre said, or something with an atomic number of 6, but with a crystalline structure much more complex than diamond. It was a hell of a lot harder than diamond, too, Hobbs added, and with a higher melting point. The drones had zero effect, and they would have burned through diamond as easily as cloth. Send in the second wave, Hobbs, Zai ordered, and get that apparition off my air screen. Tyre's diagram winked rudely out, replaced by the arcing lines of the remaining drones. They plummeted into the object, which froze again to repulse their blows. This time, it seemed to the captain's eyes that the efficiencies of the object's metamorphosis were greater. Only the exact position where each dronelet struck became motionless. The rest of the ocean raged on unaffected. I see, muttered Tyre, drinking in the data. Zai ignored her. Give me 50 terabits from the aft photon cannon, he ordered Gunnar Wilson. Dead center. A targeting dot appeared on the object. Ready at your command, the gunner said. Zai started to give the order, but the words stuck in his throat. The bridge's main air screen, his personal synesthesia, even the backup hard screen surrounding the shipmaster's chair, all showed the same unbelievable thing. The object had disappeared. Blind man. Though stripped of sight in his position in the chain of command, Data Master Kax still possessed illusion. The flying dust of optical silicon had ravaged only his eyes. The optic nerve and the brain centers were completely functional. Indeed, once the links returned to Legis, implantation of a pair of artificials would be a trivial matter. Most importantly, the tiny receivers that allowed synesthesia, the gateways to second sight, were still active. These devices surrounded the lamina crebrosa, hundreds of them in a man of Cax's profession, unscratched by the glass fragments that had destroyed his normal vision. Kax followed the battle from sickbay, drifting among the views of various drones, watching over young Tyre's shoulder as she constructed experimental models of the object's virtual matter. Occasionally, Tyre would query him, asking for advice or confirmation, using sign language to conceal the conversations. Kax had become an invisible confidant to his own replacement, like the helpful ghost of an ancestor. Then the object disappeared. Telescopy showed nothing but background stars. The throughput of X-ray spectroscopy was flat. Infrared showed only the cold of space. Kax overheard the shouting on the bridge, watched as Tyre spun from one drone's viewpoint to another, replaying the vanishing again and again as the captain demanded answers. Had the thing discorporated itself? Tyre searched vainly for radiation and debris. Teleported? DA software plunged into the chromographs leading up to the disappearance, looking for signs of some magical substance emerging from the object's depths. The blind man stayed calm. He let the visualizations of Tyre's wild speculation fall from his false sight and returned his view to the empty space where the object had been. He moved from drone to drone in real time, staying in the spectrum of visible light, watching. The empty space seemed perfect. Background stars shone through it, shifting slightly due to the drone's mismatched velocities with the object. The drones could see each other through the now empty space. One of them had a view of the Lynx that had been blocked by the object before its disappearance.
"Tyre," Cax said. She didn't answer for a moment. Overwhelmed by the captain's demands for answers, she hadn't time to spare for a noisy, blind ghost. But the old reflexes of command eventually compelled a response.
"Yes, sir,"
she hand-signed.
"Ask the drone pilots to move Recon 086. Just a short acceleration."
"Heading?"
"It doesn't matter, just as long as it's sudden."
The blind man watched carefully from the indicated drone's point of view, training his mind on the familiar shape of the frigate. 10 seconds later, the image jerked as the drone accelerated in a short, clean burst. The Lynx was still visible, still there in the right place. But Cax saw what he had been watching for, a subtle imperfection that lasted less than a tenth of a second, an almost subliminal tear in synesthesia. The frigate had distorted for a moment, then the shape had reformed even before the drone's acceleration ended. The image was false, a mere feed coming from something between the drone and the Lynx. Data Master Cax reserved the image in a high-definition buffer of the frigate's short-term memory and carefully cut the few dozen frames that showed the distortion. He sent them to Ensign Tyre, marked priority, and leaned back with satisfaction, smiling to himself. Invisibility meant nothing to a blind man. Executive Officer.
"Invisibility?" Captain Zai muttered.
"Controlled refraction, sir,"
corrected Ensign Tyre. Hobbs glanced sidelong at the young woman. Despite her proficiency at data analysis, Tyre hadn't acquired a knack for spotting the captain's moves yet.
"Not transparency, however," she continued. "The object doesn't move the radiation straight through itself. It calculates observer viewpoints, and its surface acts like a large, highly directional hard screen, emitting imagery appropriate to their positions."
"I believe the ensign suggests, sir,"
Hobbs offered,
"that in the heat of battle, the unpredictability of dozens of accelerating viewpoints would make this invisibility useless."
"It's playing with us, Hobbs," he said, "testing its abilities against ours."
She thought for a moment.
"It's possible that it's trying to buy time, sir. The battlecruiser is less than an hour away."
The captain nodded. By stripping the bridge of armor, the Lynx had made 6 G's on the way here, but the Rix vessel hadn't turned over. It wasn't bothering to decelerate in time to match its velocity with the Lynx and the object. It was still barreling madly toward them, cutting its transit time to a minimum. The battlecruiser would pass by at a high relative, almost twice as fast as the first pass. The Rix had abandoned almost their entire drone complement, but Hobbs didn't doubt it could destroy the wounded frigate in the minutes it would be in range.
"That's likely, Hobbs. So let's see if we can hurt this thing."
"Happy to, sir."
Hobbs interlaced her fingers.
"Tyre, give me a target."
"May I suggest random parallax and a complex background, ma'am?"
"You may."
Tyre signaled and the recon drones accelerated into action, whipping themselves into a froth of zigzags about the object. A decoy drone spat out chaff-light metals that the Lynx's close-in defenses illuminated with jittering arms of laser light. The object became visible against the background stars and shimmering chafe, a blur of inconsistencies as it struggled to keep up its illusion. Zai nodded.
"Gunner, 50 terabits, dead center."
"Yes, sir."
The thin lancing beam of the laser was visible for a moment as it burned through the chaff, a flashlight in a dusty attic. The object appeared for a second, revealing its new configuration. Spheroid, with a huge lens cut from it, concave and mirrored, a lens focused back toward the Lynx. The blinding image was burned into Hobbs's eyes. That brief moment when the beam split in two, the sharp point of a very acute angle. As the laser's reflection raked across the frigate, the two rays of the angle closed to a single line. The aft gunnery hardpoint, which Hobbs had stripped almost entirely of its armor, was silenced, and the beam winked out.
"Medical! Medical!"
cried the first voice from a station 100 meters from the stricken hardpoint. Hobbs responded with wooden hands. She tried to raise the cannon crew, but they didn't respond. More voices called for medical. A decompression alarm sounded. As one, the bridge crew reached to seal their pressure hoods. Casualty icons sprouted from across the ship. Still nothing from the hardpoint that had fired. The crew there were vapor, Hobbs realized.
"Heatsink failure, sir. The beam went straight through us."
"Hobbs," the captain said, Bulkhead two aft is hold, sir. The foam's not holding and...
Hobbs! Sy shouted. His cry brought her to a halt.
Yes, sir. The singularity generator, is it intact?
Hobbs shook her head to clear the anguished voices that clamored for her attention. The hull was breached again and the Lynx's bulkheads had been stripped to the bone. Crew were dead and wounded. Why was the old man worried about auxiliary power? She plumbed internal diagnostics.
Yes, sir, it's fine, but main drive is bleeding. Run it up to critical, he ordered.
What?
Run the hole up to critical, Hobbs. I want a singularity self-destruct 10 seconds after I give the order.
Yes, sir, she said. Her second sight fell into the Hadean colors of self-destruct protocols. She gave the gestural command, a twist of the thumbs and shoulders that was intentionally designed to hurt. Then she realized what the captain meant to do.
God, Cathry thought, he's going to kill us all.
Cathry Hobbs stepped into the observation blister with her jaw clenched. She was careless of vertigo. There wasn't time left to worry about up and down.
How many casualties? Zai asked before she had a chance to speak.
41, sir, she reported. 30 burned and 11 gone in hull blowouts. Only 12 are able to receive the symbiont. There was a silence for the dead. Hobbs was loath to break it, but events were closing in on the Lynx. Perhaps she would never be as grey as her crewmates and captain. Ritual seemed so often to stand in the way of efficiency.
Sir, she said, the Rick's battlecruiser will be in range in 20 minutes.
Lawrence Zai nodded. Facing away from Hobbs, as he was, the blackness of space almost swallowed the gesture. She started to speak again, but then she saw the object. Hobbs had never seen the thing with naked eyes. In primary sight, it was much darker than she expected. They were very far from the Legia's sun, and she couldn't see the details that the enhanced, telescopic views of synesthesia provided. But the undulations were still visible. The crests of rolling dunes caught sunlight, igniting like whitecaps on a moonlit sea. Surrounding the object was a squadron of recon drones. They played green spotlights across its surface, low-power lasers searching for data, for weaknesses. She gathered herself.
If we plan to take action against the object, we should do it now, sir.
Hobbs, the captain said tiredly, what exactly would you suggest? She swallowed.
Nuke it, sir.
The ram drones had nukes in the mix, didn't they? He asked.
Only low-yield fission, sir. I'm talking about a fusion warhead in 1,000 megaton range. No imaginable substance could withstand a surface temperature of 1,000,000 degrees.
Ah, he answered. She waited as he watched the sinuous thing below them.
Any other ideas?
He finally asked.
Yes, sir.
She'd come with several options in case he'd managed to think of an answer to a nuclear strike.
We can use the 3 remaining photon cannon in tandem, sir, and keep the Lynx under random acceleration. The reflective lens on the object was 20 clicks across and very rigid. DA thinks it couldn't track us.
But could we damage it?
We only hit it with 50 terabits, sir. With 3 cannon at maximum, we could easily do 500.
It won't work, he said.
Sir, she said, either of those options would create a surface temperature adequate to vaporize neutronium. Nothing material can withstand those energies.
Hobbs, what if this thing can achieve perfect reflectivity?
What do you mean, sir?
The captain turned to face her.
What if it can become a mirror so perfect that it could drift through the core of a Type G star and not gain a single degree?
The image appalled Hobbs. It was an engineering fantasy, the sort of thinking that had led her to reject utopianism with its promise of universal prosperity.
That's impossible, sir.
We don't know that. Our own energy shunts can protect us from nuclear explosions.
The shunts are a field effect, sir. They're energy, not matter. We've yet to see the object do anything except change its crude elemental makeup. It hasn't created any complex devices or emitted any coherent energies. And our shunts aren't magic. A direct hit from a decent fusion warhead and the Lynx would be vapor.
The Lynx is the Lynx, Hobbs. This object is something rather more, but it is inexperienced, and every time we attack it, we educate it. Hobbs shook her head. If we hit it with nukes or lasers, it will adapt, the captain said.
Sir, it must have structural limits.
Zai took a step toward her, waving her silent.
This object is not a spacecraft, Hobbs. We can't treat it like an engineering problem. For a moment, think like the Ricks. To them, it's not an artifact at all.
Hobbs took a breath. What was the old man on about? The object was huge, certainly, and a creation of unknown science. But the Empire had fought strange and superior technologies on every front for centuries. Had Lawrence Zai ceased to believe he could win this fight? If it's not an artifact, sir, then what is it? It's a living god. Hobbs swallowed. Had the old man gone daft? That doesn't mean we can't kill it, Captain. He smiled. No, indeed. We have the power to destroy it. But our solution must be absolute. Not mere energy, but a tear in the fabric of space-time, a black hole. Self-destruction is the only honorable choice. Captain, I have other options. Silence, Hobbs. It's time. Zai brushed past her, tersely ordering the blister to fold when they were out. Hobbs realized it was pointless to argue. The man was fixated on death. That was why he had returned here to the blister, to resume his mordant meditation on his own doom. Poor Laurent, she thought. His failure to take the blade had consumed all his strength. His finest moment had broken him inside. And the Vaden man's lost honor was now embodied in the object, within reach again. One final chance to die for the risen emperor. As she followed her captain up to the bridge, Catherine Hobbs felt the flechette pistol strapped to her wrist, and wondered if it had been a mistake to save Zai from the mutineers. 10 minutes, sir. 1,000 seconds and the Ricks would be in range again. Hobbs shook her head. Having survived one pass by the vastly superior warship, it seemed insane to face another. But it was too late for these thoughts. Even at maximum G, the frigate could no longer put itself out of harm's way. What's the light speed delay? Zai asked. Sir? Between ourselves and the battlecruiser. Hobbs changed her scale markers to light seconds. Was the captain thinking of communicating with the enemy? 9 seconds round trip, sir. Then we wait, Zai said. For what? Hobbs wondered. 100 seconds ticked by. The Rick's craft approached, decelerating now as the object writhed before them. Hobbs focused her mind. She tried to recall the way she had seen Zai 10 days ago, a paragon of honor and competence. She would have died for him without question. Why were there doubts in her mind now? She reviewed the situation. The Lynx's orders were clear. To prevent contact between the compound mind and the battlecruiser. This was the only way to be absolutely sure. Perhaps self-destruction was the honorable choice. But Lawrence seemed to relish the thought of death, and he had been blind to other options, even when there had been time. Of course, the time for options had run out. Catherine wondered if her doubts stemmed from the foolish affection she had allowed herself to develop for her captain. Had Zai's rejection lessened her loyalty? Hobbs tried to feel the sense of duty that had compelled her to join the Navy. The utopian world she had left behind was an empty place of pleasure and safety. Here, at the verge of death, she should find meaning. That was the axiom of Imperial service. The old enemy gave life value. But facing suicide, there was nothing inside Catherine Hobbs but regret and fear, and a desire to find a way out. She checked the time. They'll be in range in 50-odd seconds, sir. The round-trip delay is now 5 seconds. Take us in, first pilot. I want collision with the object in 40 seconds. Smooth acceleration. This was it. First pilot Maradona's anxious eyes glanced toward Hobbs. Catherine's mind whirled. What did Maradona want from her? Hobbs nodded confirmation to the pilot with an expression that she hoped said, "Trust me." Trust me to what? The frigate jolted a bit as the 2G acceleration began, a gravity ghost wrenching a metal shriek from around them. The captain raised no protest. Frick, Zai said. The engineer was here on the bridge, ready to control the singularity generator from under the captain's gaze. The hull could go critical only with the first engineer's approval. He could stop this if he wanted. Hobbs wondered if Watson Frick had mutiny in him. She doubted it. Why was she speculating like this? The bridge had once seemed sanctified to Hobbs, a place of order and faith, but that surety had been stripped, undermined by her doubts. And perhaps by her foolish feelings for Laurent Zai. She wondered if she would be thinking of mutiny if Laurent hadn't told her about his lover on home. The red battle lights seemed menacing now. The bridge had become a twilight place. Build the generator on an exponential curve, Frick. Self-destruct to occur on contact. Yes, sir, said the first engineer without emotion. Fail safe in 20 seconds. This was the end, then. In moments, they would all be destined for death, absolute and irrecoverable, at the moor of an event horizon. Unless Catherine Hobbs acted. She put aside her doubts about her own motivations. There were more than 300 surviving crew to consider. What if now, with only seconds left, she were to take the bridge? She was the only one here who was armed. The pilots would side with her.